What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant. Still masking and socially distancing. We're coming up on a year of this almost. Man, I can't believe it. Alongside Michael F. Florio, we got producer Steve with us as well. We took the week off. Florio, how was your week off? Did you do anything special?
Yeah, I did. I went down to La Jolla for a few days. That's like a beach town by San Diego. It was really cool. I got to go jet skiing in February, which was a new experience for me. It was pretty cold, so I cut it a little early, but it was a lot of fun still. And then the rest of the week, just kind of relaxed, watched the Super Bowl in La Jolla. That wasn't as pleasant as I was hoping for, but it was a fun week off. How was yours?
We'll get to the Super Bowl in a second. I had a good week. I sort of unplugged for the most part. I didn't really do anything football related after watching the Super Bowl. In fact, I spent very little time on social media as well, which is very refreshing. I recommend it for people if you can do that. I check every once in a while. I think I might have tweeted maybe 3 times all week long, but generally I was pretty hands off of Twitter and I feel refreshed. And then I came back to it on Monday and started scrolling again. Was immediately like, ugh, I hate myself. Why did I do this? For the most part, it was a good week. I spent a lot of time reading and catching up on books and movies and all that kind of stuff. So it was good. It was totally good. So let's get to this because we didn't obviously talk about the Super Bowl since we weren't around last week. I know that the last thing we did on our last show was to give our Super Bowl predictions. And like a good producer, Steve kept the receipts. And so you have a audio record of what we chose for the Super Bowl, don't you?
I don't have them for everyone. One of us I thought were particularly close. And I have a record of that. So I was going to give you this, this bite.
You have a score in mind.
I did not prep a score, but let's just come up with one off the top of my head. So let's say
Buccaneers.
We'll get 34. I will give the
Chiefs
10.
Ooh, all right.
Right there. I was off by like 3 points for the both and one. The rest of you, not so much.
Yeah, that's not quite how I remember it, but well played. This is what happens when you're the producer. You control the audio. You can do this sort of thing.
I don't know how to do editing. That's just a straight rip.
Yeah, obviously. But I do remember we all picked the Chiefs, so we all end up looking – at least we looked foolish together. What was the whole thing. Obviously the game has been a long past now. We're more than a week, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on it. But just, you know, your thoughts, Steve. Start with you. Just your general thoughts on what you saw in that game down there in Tampa.
Man, it was exciting for the first quarter. And then it was almost a little bit of that sad death march. You know what? When the Super Bowl comes on, you have that weird – like kind of pit in the bottom of your stomach where you know it's the end of football and you kind of feel sad about it. And you didn't like going out with such a boring and slow game. You know, watching Pat Mahomes make the greatest throws of all time that get dropped where it was a little bit of a bummer. Seeing Tampa Bay or seeing Tom Brady win again was a bit deja vu. So I wasn't stoked about all that. I guess I would say the best part of the whole thing was probably the Tampa Bay celebration at the end.
Which I didn't see, because it was a death march. I sort of tapped out with about 5 minutes left in the game, something like that. I've seen enough at this point.
I meant the boat celebration.
Oh, that. Yeah, but again, because I took the week off and sort of like logged out, I only saw bits and pieces. I saw a, wobbly-kneed Tom Brady being helped off a boat. I saw the Lombardi toss, which I guess the daughter of the designer of the trophy is not happy about.
No,
she says that Tom Brady owes them an apology. And I think the rest of the world's like, whatever, get over it.
Tom Brady has more stake in that trophy than she does.
Right. Right. He's got seven. He's won 7 of them. Like, you know, let it go. No one cares but you. So Florian, I mean, your thoughts, what did you think after watching that game?
The game was as a huge Patrick Mahomes fan, like I'm not a Chiefs fan by any stretch, but I am a big time Patrick Mahomes supporter. It was rough to watch him have his first bad game as an NFL quarterback, which, I mean, 3 years into your career to have your first really bad game, I guess is saying something, but it just came at the worst time. Kudos to the Bucs defense for getting the job done. And how fitting was it that it was AB and Gronk and not like Evans and Godwin doing their thing? Like, you know, Brady just had to put his fingerprints all over it. But I do think in 1 year as a Tampa Bay Bucs, Tom Brady has been way more fun than in 20 years as a Patriot.
I think that's probably fair. I did think it was interesting that the Chiefs were beaten by mostly guys that weren't there the year before. I mean, you know, it was Brady, it was Brown, it was Gronk. I mean, all these guys weren't there last season, and they, you know, they were the catalyst. I mean, especially, you know, Brady, obviously, and Gronk, and, you know, AB steps up in the Super Bowl. I was definitely surprised by how dominant Tampa's defense was. Mm-hmm. And I knew, you know, I knew the Chiefs had injuries, you know, Eric Fisher being hurt, you know, and the shuffle along the offensive line was going to change some things, but I was still just floored at how dominant that Bucs defense was from start to finish. I would say this because somebody asked me, "What, you know, where do the Chiefs go from here?" I don't think if you're the Chiefs, you know, you have to do a major rebuild. You don't have to retool. You're still going to be a contender, right? There's no reason to think that the Chiefs couldn't somehow get back to the Super Bowl next year. They're still good enough to do that. But yeah, they just got beat up. I mean, there's just no way around it. They just got flat beat up on Super Bowl Sunday. So congrats to the Buccaneers. I think I know two Buccaneers fans. So congratulations to both of you on your Super Bowl win. Yeah. In fact, I think our pal Matt Frederick, is he a Buccaneers fan? I don't remember.
He is not. He is purely a fantasy fan. But researcher Matt Frederick's family is from Tampa Bay, and he told me that they were all really, really stoked about it. I have some family in Tampa, too. They're not Bucs fans, but they said the city was very lively this last week.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm absolutely sure. So, you know what? I think I was confused because I know Matty Frederick is a Rays fan, or at least he was cheering for the Rays in the World Series. So I think I just transferred his Bucs fanship onto him because of that. All right. When we last left you, we were kind of doing a end of season positional wrap up. We have done quarterbacks. We have done running backs. I should also mention, by the way, that we are downgrading to once a week. We have other things we're working. We're working on videos for you guys. A lot of YouTube stuff. You can check us out, by the way, at youtube.com/NFL Fantasy Football. But we're doing a lot of VOD stuff. We're writing a whole lot more. We're getting ready for the draft. So the pod's going to be once a week, starting this week. So there you go. So last time we talked to you, though, we talked about running backs and kind of how the season went for them. We still have wide receivers. Next week, we'll do tight ends. And then at that point, we'll start to transition into some draft stuff. We've got our pal Matt Okada on deck, who told me he has a ton of notes. He spent the past week watching tape and doing scouting reports. So he's got a ton of stuff. So we'll start kind of talking with him probably in, you know, sometime in March, definitely through April once we get to the draft. And we'll go really hard on that kind of stuff. But in the meantime, let's talk about some wide receivers from last year, how things went. I'll start with a question that I have asked for the other two positions so far. Who were your biggest preseason hits from the wide receiver spot?
So for me, I had a couple. I don't like to talk like the high-end receivers because a lot of people are on them. But for me, Will Fuller was a big hit. I was all over Will Fuller in the preseason. I thought that him and Watson were a match made in heaven. And up until that PED suspension, Will Fuller was a top 10 wide receiver. So I think that was a hit. I think if you kind of took Will Fuller and Marquise Brown's season and blended them into one, because I was really high on Marquise Brown as well, that was a huge great hit. But late season Marquise Brown, maybe a little. And then CeeDee Lamb was a player I was really, really high on. I think he hit. And in season, I got really high on T. Higgins. I thought before week three, I was saying to pick him up. So he was my last big wide receiver hit, I would say.
I do like T. Higgins. You know, I'm going to come back to Justin Jefferson because I really thought he was going to he exceeded my expectations. I didn't think he was going to be nearly as productive as he was. I mean, I never envisioned he was going to finish as a top 10 wideout. I just thought he would be the best of the rookies, and he was, but he had a phenomenal year. Another one who maybe wasn't quite as eye-popping, but I thought under the circumstances, LaVisca Chenault, I thought had some nice production at times. The Jaguars, you know, obviously were kind of a mess offensively at times outside of James Robinson. And it'll be interesting to see what happens if they do what we anticipate and take Trevor Lawrence with the number one overall pick. You know, we'll see what happens then. But I like the way they sort of integrated him into the offense. He was much more receiver than running back this past year, but whatever. I'll take it anyway. Anyway, we can get it. So I was very excited about him and look forward to seeing what can happen next year. I will say that, you know, if we're talking hits, we talk misses. Michael Gallup is high on my list. I thought, you know, big things were coming for Michael Gallup this year. That just didn't happen. I will say that in some ways, I guess if you could call DeAndre Hopkins a miss in the sense that I didn't think he would be quite as productive as he was. I thought that, you know, the targets wouldn't be there the way they were, but that worked out just fine. Obviously, he was a top five wide receiver when I wasn't sure that he could be. But that's a miss I will take. The Michael Gallup one hurts a little bit. The DeAndre Hopkins one to like miss and have him be better than you thought. I'll take that one all day. As for you, who were the guys you sort of swung and missed on this year?
It's funny because I was thinking about this a lot, and I think my biggest misses were the fades I had this past year, DeAndre Hopkins being one of them. I was fading Stephon Diggs. I was fading Keenan Allen and Mike Evans. That did not work out at all. And it's ironic, Marcus, because I often joke that like talent doesn't score fantasy points. But I think the lesson here is when it comes to these elite, like the very best at their position, maybe don't doubt those guys as much as I did, because same as you, I thought D-Hop was going to lose some targets and maybe not live up to expectations. I thought the same thing for Diggs and Keenan Allen, and boy, oh boy, did they make me look very, very silly.
You know, it's funny. I think I've said this before. I ended up being right about Keenan Allen, but not in the way that I anticipated. I had told myself a story that Tyrod Taylor could get the ball to Keenan, could keep him productive, could have him be okay. Obviously, that wasn't how it worked out. Tyrod gets hurt early in the year with that medical mishap. Justin Herbert steps in, is great, and Keenan Allen prospers. So I was sort of right, just not nearly in the manner that I thought I was going to be right. But whatever.
It counts.
A win is a win. A win is a win. I'll take it. I will take it. So we've got – I mean, look, wide receiver is probably the deepest position in all of fantasy. And we've got those elite guys at the top that you talked about, you know, the Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, Nuke Hopkins, all those guys at the top. How many of them do you think we're going to see come off the board in the first round next year?
I think it's possible you see between 2 to 3 in the first round, although if it was up to me, it might only be one, because I think there's going to be a top 8 consensus that I think you can – everyone will have in their own order. But for me, I think the top 8 are CMC, Dalvin, Kamara, Henry, Saquon, Taylor, Kelsey, and Adams. So I'm putting one wide receiver in that top 8 because I think Davante Adams is as good as they could come in fantasy football. But after that, so then that leaves 4 more picks in the first round. I could see one of Diggs or Tyreek Hill or potentially both, depending on who you're drafting with, sliding into those last 4 picks. But I could also see it all being running backs because – people are really trying to get that running back position addressed early in drafts before it thins out, especially because it's something that me and you talk about so much, Marcus, that from like rounds 3-4 on, the receivers are just so much better than the available running backs. So I think that's going to become more and more of the popular strategy this year. Try to get your running back in the first round if you can. And if not, you know, you could wait a little bit and then start getting your receivers.
Yeah, Davante Adams, I think, is easily going to be a first round pick. I can see people making a case for Tyreek Hill and possibly Stephon Diggs. I don't know beyond that. I think even Nuke is probably more of a second round guy for me. And it's interesting because I think every year when we get to draft season, there is one spot in the draft order that is going to be harder than all the other spots. And just listening to you, you know, kind of rattle off the top 8 in whatever order, you know, people want to put them, it makes me feel like if I get stuck at 9, I'm going to be hating life. And And not that there are bad players out there, right? There are going to still be a lot of great players out there, but it is that conundrum of, okay, do I take a running back here? Do I maybe reach and take a running back, like, say, who do I go? Do I go Nick Chubb maybe somewhere at the back of the first round, right? Do I take a chance on, I was gonna say Josh Jacobs, but I can't justify Josh Jacobs as a first round pick. I just can't. So do I take a chance on, say, Nick Chubb late in the first round? Or do I make that move and do I go get Stephon Diggs? You know, how do I negotiate what I do with the ninth pick with what's coming back around in what, 6-7 more picks to me when we come back on the turn? Anybody in that 9, 10, even 11 spot, you're going to really have some tough decisions to make. Even 12 so much, but you get the back-to-back pick. So nobody's crying for you. But it is going to be tough, right? Like, I feel like if you're in that 9 spot this year, that's going to be an ugly, just frustrating, really hard place to be. I mean, I'd rather sit at 6 and feel like I get a guy that I can feel confident on. I don't know. Am I weird? Am I crazy for that?
No, as of now, I completely agree, because let's say like the benefit of having picks 9 through 12, I guess, is that you can come away with two top 12 or 13 running backs, but you're missing out on all those elite running backs. And then the issue is, it doesn't even become at pick 9 like, oh, is it this running back or Tyreek Hill? Because I think you can make the case for, you said Nick Chubb, I think Aaron Jones might be in there, James Robinson, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift. Like, there's going to be so many, you know, like, oh, well, I like this running back more. So maybe it's just going to be a really tough decision to make. And I think if I'm in that position, maybe I grab two running backs and just say, all right, you know, like, I got that position addressed. But I even think those picks are too early to start thinking about like a Waller or a Kittle. And if you miss out on Kelsey, it's like, all right, well, now I can't get my elite tight end. So it is not – normally I like being at the end of the first round, but I don't think that's going to be the case this year.
That might be tough this year. So with all that said, and I was thinking about this as I was putting together the rundown, does it make sense to even take a first-round wide receiver? Let's exclude Devontae Adams, because I feel like he is sort of a no-brainer there, right? Like, if he's sitting there and you're at, you know, the eighth spot or what have you, and he's still on the board, I think you take him. But beyond that, does it even make sense to take a first-round wide receiver when, as you mentioned, if you wait till round 3, there's still a lot of really good, you know, wide receiver 1 type players still on the board? Does it even make sense to reach for one of those guys in the first round?
I don't think so, because if I'm in that position at pick 9 or 10 or something like that, I'm going to just double down on the running backs. Maybe I end up with something like Jones and Robinson, or Robinson and Eckler, whatever the case may be. I could find two running backs there that I feel comfortable with, because if I wait and my second running back, or let's say even you go wide receiver, like some people like to do, end of the third round for your first running back is going to be pretty gross. So, or for your, even for your second running back. So something that I like to do is grab two running backs in the first 3 rounds. And something that I'm toying with even more this year, Marcus, is two running backs and a tight end, and not even getting my first receiver till the 4th round, which to some people, you know, may sound crazy, but like, I think it's very feasible, at least with how like best ball drafts are looking now. You could wait till the 4th round and still come away with something like CeeDee Lamb, T. Higgins, Will Fuller. And like, I would love that wide receiving core.
Did we just come up with like a modified zero WR theory here? Is that what just happened here? That we're talking?
I think so.
I mean, it makes sense, right? Because as we've talked about, running back is a lot thinner. It's at least it's top heavy, right? You've got a lot of elite guys at the top. Then after, say, those first 7 or 8 guys, there is a bit of a drop off, at least in terms of the week to week consistency that you expect. We know, you know, Kelsey is probably going to be a first round pick in most leagues. There's 1 or 2 wide receivers, but generally speaking, I think the run on receivers is going to come in the 3rd round, 4th round. That's when you're going to see a lot of those guys really flying off the board, because everybody's going to try, or most people, I should say, are going to try to get their running backs fairly early in this one. One thing I was sort of thinking about and just kind of came to me a little bit. Are there guys that you think maybe are going to bounce back, that maybe were underperforming this past year, that you think bounce back a little bit? Julio Jones is the first one that comes to mind, but then I also wonder if Julio maybe is on the downside at this point. But I just wonder if there are guys that you look at that, you know, people are going to maybe turn their nose up at that you can think you can get a value on this year.
Yeah, I think Julio is a good one because I think there's a very good chance that for the first time in his career, Julio Jones is a wide receiver two in fantasy football because people are concerned about him. Some others. So, you know, I'm a team washed kind of guy, like the older receivers like AJ Green and those guys were the first names that popped into head. I can't go after them. I'm pulling up my computer's being really slow. I'm pulling up a list of wide receivers.
As you look at, because like another name that came to mind, and I guess he underperformed. I'm thinking Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yes,
is one who he ended the year as the highest fantasy scoring wide receiver in Pittsburgh. But I don't know that anybody would look at what Juju did and say he had a great year. Like, I just don't think that's possible. The question is whether or not he's still in Pittsburgh. I think that's going to have a lot to do with it. But I do think I can tell myself a story where Juju, especially if he goes somewhere else, starts to become a target monster and starts to be more than a glorified tight end, which would help his value immensely next year.
I think that is a great call. So I think like DJ Moore and Cooper Kupp fit that list, but they're going to have a lot of hype. I think Kupp with Stafford now and DJ Moore, just everyone loving him. I think a good one is Odell Beckham Jr. It feels like a lot of people have Odell fatigue. And if he's going in like the fifth, sixth round, sign me up. Like, he is just so talented that I will still get sucked back in at that price. If he's going in like, you know, the third, fourth round and people start hyping him up again, then I'll be out. But I think Odell, there's going to be a lot of Odell fatigue in fantasy this year.
I think that's a perfect description. I do. And he's a name that I think, well, at least that I forget every once in a while because he got hurt, you know, so early in the year. We didn't see him pretty much all year. And I do think that Odell fatigue is real. There are a lot of people that just don't like the guy. And for that reason, you know, they feel like he's overrated. They feel like, you know, his career peaked with the catch, which was his rookie season. And so I do think he's going to kind of hang around on draft boards. And I think fifth round is a legitimate price for Odell Beckham. And if that's what it is, sure, I would I'd take the risk on that. I'd absolutely take the risk.
The zero wide receiver strategy. Because he can easily be a wide receiver one if he is healthy and you get him in a fifth round at a nice discount. If he can give you even top 15 numbers, you've missed out on nothing by waiting at the wide receiver position.
Absolutely true. All right, so along that line, and you know, combined with the fact that the biggest, you know, internet news recently has been all the meme stocks, you know, everybody who jumped in on GameStop or AMC, by the way, did you get in? Were you a Wall Street Bets guy? Are you waiting for the Tindy Man to come? Have you followed any of that?
I did not buy. I was way too late to GameStop or AMC. I did try to get in on the Dogecoin, and it's just kind of been very stagnant since I bought it.
Yeah, I got a little bit of AMC. I lost $40 and decided that was enough. I will gladly lose my $40 and I will walk away from it there. Yeah, you pretty much learn quickly if it is or is not for you. But because of that, it made me think of some wide receivers out there that if we're going to go along this theme, whether you're going to buy, sell, or hold. I think this definitely for you dynasty folks out there, I think has a lot more impact than necessarily, you know, redraft leagues or whatever. But I came up with five guys, and then you can give me your thoughts on if you're going to buy, sell, or hold some of these guys heading into 2021. The first one is Adam Thielen. I mean, after watching, look, the touchdowns kept him afloat, but Justin Jefferson became the star attraction there. What are we feeling about Adam Thielen next year?
I was very high into Adam Thielen coming into this season, but it pains me to say that I would sell him after 2020. First, he's going to be 31 years old next year. That's getting up there for a wide receiver. And then, like you said, Marcus, career high 14 touchdowns. That made him a wide receiver one this year. You cannot rely on 14 touchdowns. Like, if that number drops to 8 next year or even lower, like, that is a huge hit to his numbers. And then he had less targets target share, receptions, receiving yards, and fantasy points than Justin Jefferson as a rookie who had no preseason. So I very much so think that 2021 on Justin Jefferson is the alpha there, and Thielen will be a very good number two wide receiver, but this might be your last chance to sell him off as a wide receiver one in Dynasty.
My first thought was hold, that maybe you can hold on, but you know, you just reminded me the 14 touchdowns and that being the career high coming at age 30, it seems really, really hard to duplicate, even in an offense that is fairly concentrated like that. I mean, we know, unless something weird happens, that most of the targets are still going to go through Thielen and Jefferson. But you're right. The decline is coming. And I think especially in this situation, I would rather sort of move on a year too early than a year too late. So maybe it is. So I'm changing my thought from hold to sell on this one. So Mike Evans, we both thought that, you know, this was the year that Mike Evans was going to fall off a little bit. I really had bought in even more heavily to Chris Godwin this past year. Midway through the season, though, it became apparent that Evans was the guy that Tom Brady was going to and making plays with. Does that continue? Do we even get more excited with a full year under their belts together, or is Brady going to distribute the wealth a little bit more next year?
I think he's a hold only because he is, for me, he is such a hard player to figure out. Like, he has all the physical ability, and he's the only player in NFL history with 1,000 yards in each of his first seven seasons, beating Randy Moss's record. So, like, yeah, he is amazing. He is a great talent. But just like Thielen, he had 13 touchdowns, which clearly helps him. And like Marcus, I know we were low on Evans, and I had him outside my top 15, and he finishes wide receiver 11, which was worse than he was last year. Like, he definitely was worse. But those touchdowns really saved him because it could have been as bad as we expected. He had a career low in air yards per game. He was over 130 with Jameis Winston per game in the last 2 years, 83 with Tom Brady. 109 targets was a career low. He had a career low in receiving yards per game, in receptions per game. So it really was just the touchdowns really saving him. He barely broke 1,000 yards. I think he is a borderline wide receiver one, maybe high-end wide receiver two, which is, I think, what he was kind of being valued at coming into this year. So I'm going to say hold, but he's a tough one to figure out.
I came into this past year saying, you know, I was adamant that he was not going to be a top 10 receiver, but I also said that I was too scared to drop him below my top 12. So I think I had him at 12, mostly because I was a chicken. So, you know, he ended up at 11, so it was fine. But I mean, I will tell you that after the first 2 or 3 weeks of the season, I wasn't really sure about it either. Cause I mean, he was, he was that goal line guy, and that was kind of it. And he wasn't really doing a whole lot else. And eventually they started, you know, using him more as a full service kind of wide receiver. But I'm sort of with you. I still think Chris Godwin is maybe the guy there. I think long-term he's the guy that is going to be the playmaker in this offense. I don't know what's going to happen with Antonio Brown if he comes back next year. I know that there's a Tyler Johnson hive that is out there in fantasy Twitter. We know that because every time he makes one of his like spectacular one-handed sticky catches, that hive starts buzzing a little bit. You know, who knows whether or not he actually steps up and becomes a bigger part of the offense. So I am a tentative hold on Mike Evans, but it worries me because that's one that could go south too in a hurry, especially if Brady decides he wants to spread the ball around a little bit more than next year. Jerry Jeudy was the next one on my list. And I really was sort of torn about this one. I think my inclination is to say bye just because he's a young player. He's a young player in an offense that has a lot of weapons. And it really depends on, for me, the maturation of Drew Locke. But you look at that receiving core in Denver, what they can have when they're healthy with Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy. And, you know, Tim Patrick played really well at times last year. KJ Hamler is still there. They've got Noah Fant as a tight end who can go out and make plays there. They've got weapons there. So it might be tough for Judy to really get a lion's share of the targets, but I'm going to sort of side with youth in this situation and believe that, you know, believe in sort of what his ceiling potentially can be and say bye. But I will tell you that I'm not confident about that, because if Drew Lock continues to just sort of be meh, then I think Judy's going to continue to be just kind of meh. I don't know your thoughts.
I completely agree. I do think, though, Judy is a buy right now, only because remember, like, last year it was Judy versus CeeDee Lamb, who is the best receiver talent in this class. And Judy, everyone hyped up his route running, and he showed us this year. Like, I'm a stats guy first before, like, what my eyes tell me. I think you get value out of both, but I just think I'm better with numbers. And there's nothing good in the numbers for Jerry Judy at all. But people who break down film and stuff all rave about how great of a route runner he is and how, you know, he's shown us everything at the NFL level that they were hoping to see. So I'm willing to give him another chance, but it's exactly what you said. I don't like Drew Lock. So that's why the fact that the Broncos have been tied to other quarterbacks this offseason and maybe upgrading the position, I think is only good things for Jerry Judy. Because he saw 93 targets from Drew Lock last year, Marcus. No one else had more than 70. The only issue is, they completed 44% of those passes. That is absolutely disgusting. So I don't think it's Jerry Judy that is the issue here. I think it is all Drew Lock, and either maybe Lock, they upgrade him or whatever. But if not, it's not going to cost you a whole lot to get Judy right now either, I don't think.
That's a good point. So you're saying if somehow the Broncos are able to swing a deal for Deshaun Watson, it's to the moon for Jerry Judy?
It is to the moon.
All right. So then a guy that he was sort of tied to in the draft, Henry Ruggs, who surprisingly, I think to a lot of people, ended up being the first wide receiver off the board in the NFL draft last year. I don't think anybody anticipated that happening. I just never felt like he was a good fit in the Raider offense last year. And the numbers sort of showed that a little bit. You talk about being a stats guy. Is that going to be his future? Does he get better? What happens? What are you doing with Henry Ruggs?
So much like Mike Evans, he is a really hard one for me to figure out. I have him as a hold only because he is so young and was a first round pick, and we know that teams, you know, they do tie value to the draft capital they give up on players. But I agree with you, Marcus. I think he was a terrible fit for the Raiders. Like, I think Jerry Judy would have been a much better fit here, and they had the opportunity to take him. Also, how crazy is it that Ruggs, Judy, Devonta Smith, they were all together in Alabama at the same time? Like, that receiving room is something wild. But what concerns me about Ruggs is this past year, Derek Carr did take more shots down the field. The issue was they weren't Henry Ruggs. They were to Nelson Aguilar. Ruggs was 5 of 14 on targets of 20-plus air yards for 245 yards and 2 TDs. Aguilar was 10 of 20 for 415 and 6 TDs. He was just the much better deep threat than Henry Ruggs. Plus, we know Darren Waller is going to be the unquestioned number one target in this offense. So I think Ruggs, as of right now, is more of a better best ball pick. He'll have some big weeks if he catches that long ball. But when is that going to come? Is it going to go to Nelson Aguilar? It's just hard to figure out.
Maybe the most telling thing about Henry Ruggs this season is that he was 5th on the team in total targets. And we just spent the year and part of this offseason so far lamenting how the Raiders don't throw the ball to Josh Jacobs enough, how Josh Jacobs doesn't get as many targets as we want. He still had more targets than Henry Ruggs. Like, that seems like a bad thing. But I'm with you in that he's young. He was a first-round pick. I think the Raiders really want to make this work, and at least they're going to give it another shot. It wasn't like he was, you know, injured all season long, and that they're frustrated with him, or that he was, you know, a bad teammate or bad in practice. He just didn't perform well on the field. I think John Gruden, Mike Mayock, I think everybody there in Vegas is willing to give him the shot to kind of be the guy they think he can be. And so for that reason, I think you hold him. I don't know that I'm you know, trying to pick him up in spots because I just haven't seen enough, and I'm still not convinced that he's a good fit for this offense. But I'm willing to kind of wait it out at least one more year. Now, if we're still having the same conversation this time next year, I think I'm willing to walk away. But right now, I'm willing to give another shot.
Was it Dorial Green-Beckham? Was that the really fast wide receiver the Raiders reached on like 10 years ago?
Yeah, which was another one that was sort of weird for me. I just remember somebody. No, it wasn't Dorial. No, was it Dorial Green-Beckham? No.
They took him over Crabtree. Whoever it was, I believe. That if we're having this conversation in a year about Ruggs, Marcus, that's going to be a name we're going to hear thrown around a lot.
I'm going to Google this. Darius Hayward Bay. That's who it was.
That's it.
Darius Hayward Bay. And I remember somebody making the point to me after they drafted him that, you know, if he's so great, why is it that he never had these banana seasons at Maryland, who played one of the more wide open offenses in college football at the time? Maryland was throwing the ball all over the place. And somehow DHB could never come up with like a huge statistical season. That probably
sounds
should have
a
been
lot a like Henry Ruggs.
Should have been a red flag, right? So, so we'll see what happens. But right, this for me is a make or break year fantasy wise for Henry Ruggs. If it doesn't happen this year, I'm just not sure that it happens, at least with the Raiders. The last one, and I kind of showed my hand on this one a little bit, was is Laviska Shenault, because I talked about how I liked him coming into this past year, and how I thought he had a good year under the circumstances in an offense that could never find its footing. They went through a number of quarterbacks down there in Jacksonville. It was an offense mostly built around James Robinson, but I'm going to say that I would kind of make Laviska Shenault a buy. I think what they did with him, the fact that look. There is no real dominant wide receiver there in Jacksonville. I guess DJ Chark is kind of the closest thing they got to it, but there are opportunities for guys to go out and be playmakers in that offense. And again, if they do what we expect and they draft Trevor Lawrence, this offense instantly gets better. So I'm not saying Laviska Shenault's going to be a wide receiver one. I think he's still a low end at best wide receiver two, probably more of a flex guy. But I like the upside, and I'm willing to kind of, you know, see if I can pick him up in a couple of spots and just hope for that upside to hit a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have him as a buy as well. I think it is the worst kept secret in sports at who the Jaguars are going to take at number one. Like, Urban Meyer was watching Trevor Lawrence at his pro day as if he was already his head coach. And there's so like that duo to me is so much to get excited for, because Trevor Lawrence looks the part and everyone says he's the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck. And then their offenses just flow together. Like Meyer is his tenure with Ohio State was running a ton of three wide receiver sets, which is what Trevor Lawrence has ran in Clemson for his three seasons there. So I think that they are going to be a very strong duo together with Shark and Shenault as the teams right now, at least as their top two pass catching options. And there's a lot to get excited for there. And I think, Marcus, if they don't get creative with Shenault, like, what are you doing? Because you can use this guy all over the field. The only thing I'll say is my stance as of now continues to be whichever one of these two, Shark or Shenault, gets more hype, I'm probably going to just draft the other one.
that's probably a fair way to do it. I think Shark's going to be the guy that people will most target, which is good for the Shenault fans like me, that I can sort of wait a little bit, hopefully, on him next year. And Steve just pointed this out. The Jaguars Twitter account is already sort of tweeting as though Trevor Lawrence is their guy. Like they're tweeting from the pro day, first pro day complete. But yeah, they're already all over it, like he's the guy.
Can we just get the Jets on the clock already?
Pretty much. This is an aside. What's going to be really frustrating is when the Jaguars are on the clock and they use the entire clock still, you know, we're still going to be sitting there waiting and they're going to use up the whole, 15 minutes or whatever it is. And they're finally going to announce what we all have known for months they were going to do. That's going to be the part that frustrates all of us. Like, come on.
Since the Jets won their second game, we've known that Trevor Lawrence is going to end up in Jacksonville. Like, let's just move on to the next
pick. Let's just go. all right. So that's sort of our look at wide receivers. I mean, I'm sure we will touch on this again, too, before the offseason is done. Especially, I know when we get to the draft, we'll talk some wide receivers, too, at that point. The other interesting thing that happened over this past week, the FCF started up. And I know we talked about it, I think, a couple of weeks ago. I think I asked if you guys were going to play FCF Fantasy, which I thought would be weird. when you can sort of, you know, in theory, control the action. Like, how do you play fantasy on that? I don't know. But they had their first games. Their inaugural weekend was this past weekend. And Steve, I need you to get back in here because you told us you sat down and watched a good chunk of it. Florian, I know you said you watched a little bit too, but Steve, I know you watched a good amount of it. And I just want to get your takeaways from it after what you saw this weekend.
I probably watched like the first 15 minutes ever of FCF football. Very interesting. They did the whole like WWE style entrance for the players. They made it feel kind of like a cool version of arena football league. I thought the weirdest thing were some of the rules though, like the offensive line and the defenses play two games back to back for two different teams. They just swap out jerseys like it's halftime, which seems like it's maybe not like a healthy thing long term. Can't necessarily speak to that, but honestly, the idea behind it seems like it's something you could get into almost a little bit like Madden meets World of Warcraft meets the Arena Football League. It's pretty in depth.
That's so. I'm stuck on the all-time offensive and defensive lines right now.
Weird. The whole defense, not the defensive line, the whole defense.
Oh, the whole defense.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So now the one thing I do know is that there's one coach and like one position coach basically because all the wide receivers just work with one wide receiver coach and all the quarterbacks work with one quarterback coach. It's not like each of the four teams has their own.
Yeah, and there's a weekly draft too. So they change teams every week.
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah. So it's like if you're playing fantasy, like it's like hardcore, really in-depth fantasy where you're voting on which player you have each week. But it's like I think it'd be tough to like sit down and watch as just a fan like one time.
So okay, so now you watched it a little bit too as well, Flory. I mean, does that sound like about how you came away from it?
I had no idea that they switched teams and that the O-line was like, that seems like a huge disadvantage to whichever team has to play second because their O-line and defense are just going to be worn out. But the thing I took away from it is Johnny Manziel looked like a superhero.
Like, he was one for five, though.
What?
He was one for five.
Oh, well, I saw him running and he just scrambled from the pocket and no one could. At one point he was running backwards. I was like, what is going on here? But he just looks fat, like the fastest guy on the field. Their extra points are from a stool, which I thought was kind of weird.
Like, yeah, I saw the, you know, one Twitter video of, you know, the quarterback takes the ball off the stool and what he's got 3 seconds to throw the ball and try to, you know, score the extra point. Where it's, I mean, it literally is a 7-on-7. It's like a combine drill almost, basically, or like a Senior Bowl drill, watching the wide receiver and the DB line up against each other. So with you guys having seen it, my first thought about the future, the long term of this league is that it's, so I refer to all stuff like this as slam ball. And I don't know if either of you are familiar with or remember slam ball. Slam ball was great to watch at like 11 o'clock at night from a bar, right? Like if I were a couple of beers in and I was out somewhere and slam ball was on TV, I'm like, oh, hey, check it out. I don't think I ever just sat down at home and watched slam ball. And I feel like that's what FCF is going to be. It'll be fun. It's kind of weird. And, you know, they're trying to do different things and try to, you know, attract more attention without directly competing with the NFL. But I always feel like it's also always going to be sort of a novelty that does well at bars late at night, like on a Friday or Saturday. Am I weird?
No, I think it's a lot like playing Madden, right? If you are actually doing like, you know, you're picking the plays, and right, when do you play Madden? Like it's like Friday, Saturday night at 11, 12 midnight. So you're not wrong in that sense. But if you're not playing, I don't know. I can't get into it.
I mean, it's on Twitch, right? They air their games on Twitch. So obviously that's the audience they're going for. So I guess that's not completely weird.
No, I think you're right though, Marcus. Like on a Saturday night, you're not going to get people to sign into Twitch and sit down and watch one of these games. But if it was on like late at night or something, I'd probably throw it on. I watched a lot of weird sports during like quarantine. Like I watched spike ball. I watched Ultimate Frisbee. There was some car, like, just because there was nothing else on. Like, I was just, so, like, if it was on then, I definitely would have threw it on then.
I'm guilty of watching a couple of marble races, so I, you know, I understand that. All right. So, okay, then, Steve, having watched, you know, 15, 20 minutes of it, would you watch it again?
Only if I, and I signed up, but I caught myself because I'll get, like, kind of addicted to something and I know it would be risky. I signed up so that I could do the level one voting for plays, which is just run or pass.
Okay. I was going to ask that. I was going to ask if you called plays, but okay. All right.
Yeah. You have to, like, pass a bar to be allowed to call actual plays. The low bar is run or pass.
Wait, what is the bar? You have to, like, you have to pass a test or something?
Yes. You get, like, a score that goes up every time you say something, or, you know, you pick the right play. If you pick, like, run, and if they run for a touchdown, you get points. Then you're allowed to pick, like, run left or run right. You get enough points, then you can pick, like, different pitch or handoff.
I would, like, just Hail Mary. Hail Mary.
They don't let you do it because you have to earn points to do that. I would be, like, making up other accounts for the other team and, like, just saying punt every time.
Chaos. First and 10 were punted.
But, yeah, they thought about that, unfortunately, so you can't do that.
All right. All right. I really don't know what to say beyond that, but I wish them the best of luck. I know that, you know, there are people out there trying to create spring football to try and capitalize on the popularity of the NFL. So hopefully this works. I don't have a real rooting interest one way or another, but if it works, great. If not, you know, we'll find something else to do with our time. Not a doubt. So I wanted to end the show because we were off last week, obviously. And I know that a lot of you who listen to this show are also fans of Around the NFL, listen to that podcast and you know, watch what those guys do. And I would assume that by now, most, if not all of you know that we lost Chris Wessling just before the Super Bowl. And like I said, we weren't here last week, so we didn't really get a chance to kind of share our thoughts. I just, you know, Wes and I did our employee orientations on the same day. It was just the two of us in the room talking to HR, watching videos. But from that moment on, I always sort of felt that we at least had that connection. But I was very fortunate over the last few years to kind of get to know Wes and kind of become friends with him. And everything that everybody has said about him to this point is absolutely true. He was one of the most genuine, caring people I've ever met. Chris wasn't just smart, he was wise. I don't think I ever had an uninteresting conversation with him. And even now, a little more than a week and a half removed from his passing, it's still weird to think about him in the past tense. I know the NFL media will never be the same place without him. I know that the ATN guys, who I love dearly, who I'm fans of and friends with, I know that those guys will never be the same. And, you know, we already miss Chris. We love him. We love Lakeisha, his wife, and their kid, Lincoln, who's just beautiful. But it's been a really surreal week without Chris Wessling here. And, you know, it was amazing to get to know him. And we'll always be sad that he's just not here anymore. That's it. That's all I got. I think on that note, that's it. We're done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends, rate, review, and remember how lucky we are to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard. Be safe. Take care of yourselves. Wear a mask. And we'll see you next week.
Something is always lost in art or experience when you analyze it. Mark Twain, once he became a riverboat pilot and learned the technical side of it, the Mississippi River was no longer beautiful for him. If I was to hire a sports writer, the first question I was going to ask him is, how do you reconcile the essential meaninglessness of sports? I mean, how do you reconcile watching young men bang into each other and try to advance an inflated pigskin against marked territory? I mean, that's what you're doing. How do you reconcile the importance of that? And I think it's like Shakespeare's poems or Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. This is going above and beyond. At its best, sports is, look at what humans can do.